This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. With us is our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, who I work with on a daily basis at our offices in Manhattan. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. It's snowing. How are you?
Well, happy spring.
Yes.
And full disclosure, there may be a little latency here in terms of you hearing this podcast, but this podcast is being recorded on the first day of spring, which we're commemorating here in New York with a nor'easter that is going to blanket the city in snow. And in fact, usually we, you know, just sit and record in the office, but today both of us were told, oh, don't bother to come in because all the patients canceled, and rightly so, because it's slippery and slidey out there. Mm. And I wasn't looking forward to trudging across town to the office because I usually walk from where I live on the east side over to the west side. And it's a nice walk, but it's a little daunting when it's snowing and the you know, especially when it's snowing sideways and the snowflakes hit you in the face, and it's pretty unpleasant.
That's true.
It's kind of trial by ordeal. So weather report, you know, I'm looking out my window here. I'm on the east side of Manhattan. And yes, indeed, it's snowing moderately heavily. What's happening out there in Queens?
I'm in Queens. It's snowing sideways.
Snowing sideways. That's not a good sign.
Moderately to heavily, yes.
Not a good sign, and accumulating.
The one advantage here, Dr. Hoffman, is we don't get to hear the outside noise like, you know, the sanitation truck or the siren or the car alarm. Things are pretty quiet, which is nice.
It's like insulation. It's everything's muffled by the snow. Okay, so let's get to questions. But first, I want to talk a little bit about one of the big stories of the week. Headline, vitamin D might be the key to syndrome affecting half of women aged 50 or plus. What's the syndrome that affects half of women aged 50 or plus? Men who don't listen? No, that's not it. let's see.
Metabolic syndrome.
Thank you very much. Okay, because, you know, people wonder, what is that syndrome that affects half of women aged 50 or plus? Metabolic syndrome. And, you know, first let's start with the definition of metabolic syndrome.
Yeah.
What does that entail?
Well, metabolic syndrome, it overlaps a little bit with obesity, prediabetes, insulin resistance, and basically you have to meet three of five criteria. The first one is for women, a waist circumference greater than 35 inches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For men,
so I would 40. Be okay even if I weren't a woman.
there you go. Okay. There you go. High blood pressure. Or at least, I guess, with the new guidelines, pre-hypertension.
What does that entail, though?
Yeah. Well, anything over 120 over 80 at this point, right?
Yeah. Here in this article, they say 130 over 85. I don't know if they're using the old, the previous criteria, but, you know, I guess depends on who you're talking to. So, you know, the criteria for high blood pressure getting even more stringent. Now, if you just have a slightly high blood pressure, it doesn't mean you have metabolic syndrome. But if you have that constellation along with several other characteristics, which you'll share.
Right. High triglycerides, high triglyceride levels.
What would
low
that be?
Low HDL.
What would be the cutoff for triglycerides?
Cutoff for triglycerides, high triglycerides is anything over 150.
Okay.
And low HDL, anything less than 40. We like to see it over 40, over 50.
Mm-hmm.
So if you meet any of these criteria, three out of the, I believe I mentioned five, waist circumference.
Fasting blood sugar,
fasting blood sugar,
yeah.
That's the fifth one.
Yeah.
That's the fifth one.
So
impaired fasting glucose, any three of those meets the criteria for a diagnosis.
Okay.
Of the metabolic syndrome.
And why might it be significant? I mean, who cares? You know, so half of women have that, and what's the big deal?
Well, vitamin D may help in to stave off the effects of, but I also have to wonder if metabolic syndrome is also causing
right.
vitamin D.
So it's a correlation, not necessarily a causation. And you know what I got to say is that, you know, I looked at this article with some degree of mild skepticism, because it turns out that individuals who are overweight tend to hide their vitamin D in their fat, and
yes,
it's less accessible
sequestered.
To the bloodstream. So
yeah.
whether this is simply, okay, those women are a little fatter, and maybe their vitamin D is, as a result, lower, or is the vitamin D deficiency a cause of some metabolic problems? Here they actually address that. They say that there have been associations proposed between vitamin D deficiency and inflammation and cardiometabolic diseases. And they also explain a mechanism because they say that the presence of vitamin D does something to potentiate the effectiveness of insulin. Okay? It works at the cellular level to make insulin more efficient. And we know that insulin resistance is a feature of metabolic syndrome and, of course, prediabetes. And so, you know, it's, I mean, look, it kind of all supports this concept that we've been talking about for, well, you know, well over a decade, you know, maybe 15 years or so, that a very high percentage of people don't get enough vitamin D because of lack of sunlight exposure. They live in northern latitudes. Their diets are not rich in vitamin D. And that
they're slathering on sunblock.
And it's not just about bones.
Slathering on,
In the study, they talk about what are called extraosseous effects of vitamin D deficiency. In other words, outside the bone density.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what they kind of interesting statistics here, because they did this in Brazil, which is considered a pretty sunny place.
Yeah.
And what they found was that there was a very high percentage, I think the majority of women were considered insufficient in vitamin D.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, what you were alluding to before, the vitamin D receptor is expressed in insulin-secreting pancreatic beta cells.
Right.
And in the peripheral target tissues, muscle, fat tissue, and all of that. So
it goes both to production of insulin. Mm-hmm. So if you don't produce enough insulin, that could be a problem. But also in cases where you produce adequate amounts or even too much, it just does not do the job because of resistance to insulin at the tissue level. So it's, you know, both at the, it's at the alpha and the omega of insulin metabolism. Vitamin D is very crucial.
So even the deficiency, whether it's caused by or metabolic syndrome or the D is proposed to possibly have a hand in causing metabolic syndrome, it's still a bit of a vicious cycle because the vitamin D deficiency in itself, metabolic syndrome or not, can still adversely impact blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We know the association between blood pressure and adequate vitamin D levels as well.
So that's quite fascinating, because let's say the more overweight you are, the more your vitamin D hides in your fat. And that could actually create a vicious cycle whereby it's harder and harder for you to get adequate vitamin D. Maybe you're taking a standard multi that has 400 international units of vitamin D, or
which
maybe
is
even
useless.
800. And if you're overweight, it's not going to have the right impact.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, good stuff.
Well.
Okay.
Okay.
But bottom line, take your vitamin D, get some sun exposure.
Take your vitamin D. It's appropriate to take a supplement here in the Northeast. Again, reminder to everybody, we don't get the raise between October and March or April. Mm-hmm. So it's appropriate to take a good healthy dose during the winter. Your vitamin D levels will be different between spring and fall. And after a certain age, age 60, 65, we also don't absorb the UVB rays as well because of the lack of the 7-D hydrocholesterol under the skin. Mm-hmm. So it's still appropriate to take a supplement.
Yeah. And I got, I'm at the age where, you know, the kids in my family are having kids, and I'm advising pregnant moms to take not just 2,000 international units, but studies show that up to 4,000 international units are safe and even more beneficial. And, of course, we monitor vitamin D levels. We don't want them to get too high. But if they slip down below 40, then that's actionable. We should try to get them above 40 or even 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do disagree with some people. I've actually heard some people who are a little over the top about this, where they want vitamin D levels 100. And I don't know.
Yes.
I think that might be pushing the envelope. You know, you might see some people getting kidney stones at that level, and maybe that's not so safe.
Right. They would have to be very, very, very closely
monitored.
I remember there was a pretty progressive gynecologist, a Dr. Peacock.
Yes.
Who's had several cases of vaginosis where it was only alleviated when their vitamin D level went just over 100.
Yep. Yep.
That was
interesting. She was giving massive doses of vitamin D and for because it seems to help with resistance against fungal infections in Canada.
Yeah.
So the yeast infections went away when the vitamin D was restored. Interesting stuff. All right. Let's get to questions because we want to leave some time for that.
Actually, we've got a nice note, Dr. Hoffman, for you from Adele. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I wanted to take a moment to thank you for recommending U.S. Wellness Meats and Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club on your broadcasts. As a longtime listener with major medical issues, I wrestled with trying either suggestion and finally decided that if you are incorporating these two companies in your daily life, why shouldn't I?
There you go. We want to be a role model.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Adele looks forward to her monthly olive oil delivery. It's been 6 months now and she's hooked.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got my delivery, and it's just a beautiful assortment of different artisanal olive oils. They're on hiatus right now. They're not an active sponsor. I think they kind of cycle through the seasons, but I still want to give them a shout-out because they're a great sponsor. And, you know, one of the latest things that relates to olive oil is the finding that a Mediterranean diet is helpful for osteoporosis. Now, why is that? Well, it's got lots of natural anti-inflammatories, you know, from fish and from the polyphenols in fresh fruits and vegetables and spices. Mm-hmm. But I think a key element of that is olive oil polyphenols. And there are actually some studies out of Spain which now show that olive oil polyphenols have a potent effect on bone density. So, you know, yet another benefit to fresh-pressed, artisanal, aromatic olive oil that's, you know, unrefined and virginal.
Yeah. Okay,
never
thank you,
touched.
Adele.
Right.
Yeah. We have an email from Marion. I'm a 56-year-old female who has several cystic and fibroid conditions, breast cysts, finger cysts from osteoarthritis, pancreatic cysts, and uterine fibroids. Is there a plan I can implement to get rid of these conditions?
Okay, well, you know, let's get our terminology straight because there are cysts. There is what is called fibrocystic breast disease, and then there are fibroids.
Yeah.
And fibrocystic breast disease, while the tissue in the breast, if you looked at it, you know, closely under MRI or, you know, tissue pathology, you'd see cysts or little fluid-filled sacs. Fibroids are different. They are
uterine fibroids. Yes.
Yeah. So there's a different type of tissue. However, you know, there may be a common pathway because estrogen dominance will maybe cause the proliferation of breast cysts along with fibroids. You know, hyperstimulation of the female tissue that's estrogen responsive. So, you know, there could be estrogen pathway. You know, we can modulate that in certain ways. The pancreatic cysts, you know, I'm just not sure if they're related. And, you know, I'm not sure there's a dietary way or a supplement way to alleviate that. Although pancreatic cysts might be a sign that the pancreas, too, is overactive or stimulated. Maybe trying to work too hard to produce insulin in the face of insulin resistance. But I'm just speculating there.
The finger cysts, she says, from osteoarthritis. I wonder if she's speaking of deformity, like in... No, but that would be rheumatoid arthritis. Mm. Anyway, these fibers...
Well, you know, there is this thing. There is this thing called a Baker's cyst, which is a it behind the knee. There's like a fluid filled sac.
It's behind the knee. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a manifestation of osteoarthritis. So, I mean, it's conceivable that she has finger cysts that are very small manifestations of osteoarthritis. Look, is there a natural approach to this? And the answer is, you know, I think it's worth trying a very clean diet, you know, along with the right kind of supplementation may help to alleviate that.
Cysts are also inflammation, but coming back for a moment to the breast cysts, the uterine fibroids, I think about also a lack of iodine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's not so much that, yes, people are using iodized salt. We get some iodine from seafood, from onions, possibly from milk products because dairy equipment is cleaned with an iodine solution, etc. However, what people fail to recognize is that that iodine is being is in competition with the fluoride in our water, in toothpaste.
Yep.
The bromides in whether it's fertilizers or herbicides, pesticides, all of that, or the bromated flour of the sliced bread that you're getting at the grocery store, that type of thing. And often the fluoride will win. The other will win over the, and even from, you know, the iodine. Maybe this is also why that we're seeing more of a prevalence of hypothyroidism.
And by the way, you know, there's a lot of thyroid cysts, too. That, you know, may also be attributable to that. And, you know, as you speak, it gives me an opportunity to, Google iodine and fibroids. And actually, there are protocols that involve, the use of iodine for fibroids. So that's something that we've incorporated from time to time, in addition to reducing the estrogenic stimulation, you know, getting patients off phytoestrogens like soy.
Yes.
And also just reducing body fat will reduce the estrogen stimulation.
Yes.
Exercise will reduce it. You know, alleviating constipation will actually help the body rid itself of excess estrogen. You know, there's a protocol which maybe you can share for estrogen dominance that might help the breasts and the fibroids as well.
Yeah, take flaxseed lignans, like in Breval, is good for binding up that excess estrogen and carrying it out of the body. DIM is also helpful. A lot of cruciferous vegetables as well. And taking calcium D-glucarate, that particular form of calcium, which is not your regular for the bones calcium. Calcium D-glucarate is critical for detox of excess estrogen. And any female or any, otherwise, I would look for how well their detox pathways are doing.
Yes,
that
exactly.
Their glutathione levels are enough, that they're getting the proper amino acids, that they're getting enough magnesium and B vitamins and so forth. And
taurine appears to be something that helps with conjugation of estrogen and might be an add-on to that kind of protocol for estrogen dominance. So we've written several articles on that. And, you know, sometimes articles that I've written just kind of fall into the ether and into relative obscurity. But if you Google estrogen dominance, you'll actually find the article that I wrote about that fairly high up in the results. For some reason, it just, you know,
that's great.
It's that Google algorithm, you know, that somehow selects one of my articles for either obscurity or prominence, and it's not clear why that happens.
It's a popular article, and otherwise, go to drhoffman.com. You can access all the articles there. as well.
Indeed. All right. Yeah. We have time for another question during this segment.
Okay. We've got an email from Nadine, who has an 11-year-old son who suffers from seasonal allergies around February or March. They live in Florida. Doctors have recommended Claritin, but it makes him spacey. At night, I've given him Benadryl. Finally brought him to a pediatrician who confirmed it's just allergies and to try Flonase or Nasacort. But my son's been taking it for a week and his symptoms have gotten worse. Then I remembered your podcast with Dr. Gustavo Ferrer. So I listened to it again. I bought the elderberry, the homeopathic remedies. He still has now this cough, and I'm wondering if the steroid nasal sprays are causing this nonstop coughing. Have you heard of these sprays causing a cough or having side effects?
Well, yeah, I don't know whether the cough is just the result of the allergies for which the spray is ineffective or whether the spray can cause the cough to get worse. In certain cases, the spray will cause hoarseness. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. So, you know, more to the point is, you know, what can you do about these, what appear to be spring allergies? And, you know, certainly we're not seeing a lot of spring allergies right now as the, you know, New York is blanketed in snow. But I think within a couple of weeks, you know, they're going to start to pop up because it usually goes from like freezing to it's going to be 70, you know, right, in 2 weeks. And then the jet stream is going to bring all that pollen from the south and people are going to be sneezing. So things that we ought to be thinking about, diet, obviously.
Yes.
You know, kids consume so much wheat.
And an 11-year-old boy, yeah.
You know, so
gluten and dairy, yeah, it may be simpler, at least in the beginning, Nadine, to take them off all dairy because all that dairy is simply adding to the congestion. Mm. It's creating more mucus, more phlegm. Dairy has been known to cause a chronic post-nasal drip, which keep people coughing or clearing their throat or even being told that they have reflux or even silent reflux. So that might be the first order of business anyway. And then to investigate any other food allergies. And, you know, the pollens, depending, they're in Florida and around February, March, I'm not sure what's growing there.
Yeah.
But
it might
grasses
be different than
are related
what's growing
to
in the
grains.
Northeast.
Yeah. Grasses are related to grains. With trees, we have to be careful of certain fruits and so forth. So all of these could be playing a role.
Yeah.
Certainly.
So, for example, if you are allergic to tree pollen, you might find that when you have raw peaches or apples that you have mouth itching and that is a cross reactivity because it's a tree fruit. Mm-hmm. Among the things that are supplements that are helpful, quercetin, certainly.
Yes.
You don't want to go pretty hard on quercetin. It inhibits mast cells from releasing pro-inflammatory compounds that cause allergy symptoms. Bromelain. Which blocks the allergy cascade. Sometimes stinging nettle is helpful. And by the way, those three things are combined in a product called Dehist, which is available at drhoffman.com from our full script dispensary. NAC, N-acetylcysteine, thins mucus.
Yes.
Horse fish oil is anti-inflammatory, anti-allergy, vitamin C.
Yeah. Vitamin C has a nice antihistamine effect as well. That can be helped.
Maybe butterbur is usually pitched as a migraine remedy, but it's actually a pretty good allergy medication. It has
butterbur.
Yeah, it has actually anti-leukotriene effects. Pycnogenol, MSM, clear nasal spray for sure, because you know.
Nasal spray. Yeah.
Yeah, helps a lot of our allergy sufferers because you know you get this colonization of bacteria in your nasal passages, and that may make things worse. You got eye problems. I like Similasan eye drops. So those are among the things that help.
There's the pharmacy.
Yeah, right.
There's the pharmacy.
And, you know, I think we'll put this up as a protocol maybe next month as spring allergy season begins.
Oh,
we'll refresh
be
that article and then, you know, get out there. But right now, what we need more are frostbite remedies. You got any good ones?
Frostbite? Don't go out.
Right.
Don't go out, especially when the snow is going sideways.
Do a podcast. nice, you know, relax.
Yeah, that's
sit
what
by
I did
the microphone,
this
do a podcast. Right. Okay, that's what we're doing today. Right. All right, so let's pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Folks, if you're desirous of hearing more questions in part two, Layla, what's coming up?
Oh, is there a remedy for arterial plaque other than a stent?
Okay, we'll tackle that in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.